And welcome back. This is Stephen Buck, President and CEO of Care Providers Oklahoma, and thank you for joining us at Studio CPO. I have an outstanding guest today, and Brian, I will tell you, ever since you and I met 2 or 3 months ago and you said you would do this, I've been looking forward to this conversation.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
How is that? I should ask, you are probably originating your call from Chicago, I believe. Is that pretty accurate?
That's it. I'm in Chicagoland. I'm about halfway between Wrigley Field, where my Cubs play, and AmFam Park, where the Brewers play, where I work in Milwaukee. So it's good to be here in the Midwest.
Well, Brian, I know you're also an Indiana Hoosiers basketball fan, so I'll be ready to watch your team rally in 24-25. Good luck for the Cubbies. I know that that is a passion of a lifetime to support that ball club. And I hope both of those fare well for you.
There's probably a lot of parallels between being a Cubs fan and advocating for skilled nursing facilities of late. I'll remind my skilled nursing facility listeners that we did finally hang a championship, and we're going to do the same in this sector as well.
You know, it's all about flying the W, isn't it?
Amen. Amen. I got a few flags around here just waiting, ready to go.
All right. Well, you made the right segue. You have a really interesting career pathway that has put you in a position to be a tremendous advocate for our senior community. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your current role? You actually had some time in a colleague organization of CPO. Help our listeners know who Brian Perry is.
Sure. Well, always a little embarrassing to talk about yourself, but I'm happy to do it here for a minute. So I grew up in Indiana, southeastern Indiana, in, like you said, Indiana Hoosier basketball country, where, you know, on one hand we had Bobby Knight, and on the other hand we had God. And depending on whether or not it was game day, depending on which of those two epic figures were in charge. And I had the pleasure of going to IU and study public policy there. So, funny enough, fast forwarding 25 years, I'm one of the few people I know that's still using his college degree on a daily basis. But from Bloomington, I went to Indianapolis and worked for a session in the Indiana State Assembly under an absolutely legendary state senator there by the name of Luke Kinley. Fantastic guy, ran the budget, you know, responsible for a lot of really big things that have happened in Indiana in the last quarter century. And he was a bulldog. And the kind of guy that you just had a hard time advocating to, because he knew what he wanted, and no was his favorite word. So the Indiana Healthcare Association, which was my first true job after that internship, came calling. And I think they thought that they were going to hire a guy that finally they'd found a way to get into that state senator. And which just tells you they didn't necessarily know that state senator very well. So they hired a guy to run reimbursement in myself, who at the time, I don't think I really knew the difference between Medicare and Medicaid, and quickly figured it out, quickly learned it. But I spent a few years there getting to know not just the sector, but getting to know a lot of the providers who were operating in the state of Indiana. And that really set me on the pathway to building an advocacy career in this sector that has spanned not just skilled nursing and assisted living, but beyond that, from the acute care side on the hospital with hospitals and doctors, through insurance and into home health and hospice. From IHCA, I spent 6 or 7 years at Golden Living, former Beverly, and had sort of a very small regional role there on the government relations side. And then when our good friend Cliff Porter moved over to the American Healthcare Association, I had the pleasure of backfilling his role at HCR Manor Care in Toledo. So I ran their government affairs program for about 9 years, which went through everything from a bankruptcy into being purchased by a not-for-profit in ProMedica Health System out of Toledo. So I'd really sort of given myself a free MBA is the way that sure. I look at it, with a lot of fascinating insights into not just the business side, but really where my passion was, which was with that, you know, the caring and caretaking of seniors in America. And after a fun career there and working side by side with the good folks at Direct Supply, like Bob and Genevieve Hillis and many others. I'd worked side by side with them for 20 years in the advocacy space. I had the pleasure of joining up with them about 18 months ago. And so I'm currently the Vice President of Government Affairs for Direct Supply in Milwaukee, representing not just the 15,000 nursing homes, a very large book of assisted living customers, and frankly, anywhere seniors are cared for. And it's been an absolutely lovely, fun transition into Direct Supply, and really happy to then get to work with folks like you.
Well, I want to hear a little bit about your Direct Supply experience thus far. It's been, you know, almost a couple of years, and what gets you excited going to work for every day. But before you comment on that, at some point in the future, we've got to talk about Bobby Knight's Oklahoma connection, because there is a definite Oklahoma connection in his legacy. So we will revisit that someday.
I am in. The beer is on me.
We will make that happen. And maybe we could do it in the left field bleachers at Wrigley.
Even better.
That would make it even better. So tell me about Direct Supply. I had a chance to go there for the first time. That's where you and I actually met. And, you know, it is such a great company in terms of its investment in helping seniors. I saw that very quickly in their culture. Kind of talk to me about what gets you fired up every day as you do work on their behalf.
Sure. Well, look, Direct Supply is about 1,200 of the smartest folks that I've ever met and had the pleasure of working with, all with really sort of a single goal in mind, which is the betterment of America's seniors through their caregivers. Our official mantra right now is senior care everywhere, which means that wherever seniors are cared for, be it from the hospital setting on into their home and everywhere in between, we're there working with products, services, technologies, and innovations to help ultimately the outcome of their lives to be bettered. And that's a really easy thing to sort of wake up and do the job every day. And it also kind of helps you sleep like a baby, knowing that you're doing really important work. So it's not just sort of being present for what's coming in the future of healthcare, but really truly sort of designing the future of healthcare in America. I always like to say it's on us. Like it's finally our turn, right?
Right.
And so being there at the fore of new technologies, we are working really hard right now, harnessing AI. I could show you clips from 10 years ago of Bob Hillis, our CEO, talking about AI before anybody knew what those two letters stood for. And so now we've finally reached that moment where everybody's talking about AI, finding ways in which it can help provide efficiencies for the providers, also efficiencies for the actual caregiving of the seniors. It's a wonderful, wonderful time to sort of be on that side of healthcare. But the important thing, certainly where it intersects with my world, is that Direct Supply realized, Mr. Hillis understood, you know, 25, 30 years ago, that if 70% of reimbursement to our skilled nursing customers are going to come through the government and 100% of the regulations are going to come through the government, we also need to be there in front of the government advocating on behalf of our caregiving customers to sort of allow them to provide care. It's unbelievable we have to talk about just allowing them to provide care, but that's really the moment that we're in right now, isn't it? Where we're dealing with access issues because of public policy choices. Being able to do that at Direct Supply, knowing how sophisticated for many years prior to me that they have been in that space, dealing with every congressional leader of every party, not to mention those that are sitting at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue and in all 50 state capitals, public policy choices have consequences. And if we can help them make better decisions in public policy, then it's absolutely worth our time and effort.
You know, I would just offer observationally during the chance I had to spend time with you and your colleagues, I think that commitment to serving wherever seniors are, it appears very authentic within the community. So thank you again for hosting me out there. It was a very productive period of time. And I love the innovation. I think that's important because the innovation cycle, what that means in a highly capitated market like ours is every efficiency gained through our administrative process that helps us give more time to caregiving. 100%. And that's absolutely critical. You know, my follow-up question, Brian, and this is going to relate to your experience in Indiana as being part of a long-term care operator and now in your current role, you know, a lot of the fabric in long-term care in America is rural. The East Coast and West Coast get wrapped away with large population centers, but there is a lot of life being lived in rural communities across the state, across the country. And I know you've been cognizant of that and have talked about that. From your lens, what are the essential elements to make sure that we are honoring our rural seniors and most vulnerable residents in a way that gives them dignity, and then, as to your point, allows us to provide the care? What are your thoughts on that rural framework?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I live here in the Chicagoland area, and I work in Milwaukee, two metropolitan areas. Yes, Midwestern, but and I work in another town like DC, which is very much the East Coast elite, right? But rural communities are my people. I grew up in a town that look, John Cougar Mellencamp sang about my town when he sang about small town. We affectionately refer to him as Johnny Cougar because he grew up one town over, literally 10 miles away from where I grew up. And so those are my people, and that's my language. And I've seen what it was like. I remember in, the late 80s, early 90s, my grandmother, when she needed a pacemaker, she had no choice at that time, 35 years ago, to drive 90 miles to Indianapolis to get that procedure done, right? That's when you start to realize, look, there's an access to care issue when you can't get crucially needed services close to home. And so you would think that when we fast forward way into the future, into the year 2024, that rural communities would finally be respected. They're the folks that grow our food, right? These are our people that are making the wheels of America work. And yet, we still have to deal with policymakers who are sitting in a cubicle in Baltimore or Washington that are making policies that are making it harder to deliver care in those rural communities. They've not stepped foot in a nursing home in Oklahoma. They only see you all as flyover space, right? And
Right, that's
it's
right.
unbelievable all these years later that we still look at a gigantic section of America as that. That's where these things happen. And so as I keep saying, again, I feel like I have it tattooed across my chest. Public policy choices have consequences. And it's on us, folks like you, folks like me, to educate them, to let them know that rural access is everything in those communities. This could be the largest employer in a lot of small towns, as they certainly are. When a rural nursing home closes, for instance, in the middle of Oklahoma, you're not just dealing with the fact that that patient has to relocate and all of the downward health care issues that that can cause for that individual. It ripples down into the family who now might have to travel 60 miles over dirt roads to go see that family member. And it also ripples into that entire community when you're talking about what could be the largest employer, sort of the fabric that nets together that entire community. They're at the local movie theater, that the high school football game selling, cookies. These facilities, assisted living facilities, skilled nursing facilities, are these rural communities. And you'll see some policymakers who get it. Senator Tester in Montana is a great one on the Democratic side who will stand up in the face of his own party, who's making it very challenging right now. And he will say, stop this. Rural health care matters. You'll see it in an independent like Angus King in Maine. And you'll see it from some Republicans in rural states who get it. Chairman Jason Smith of Ways and Means gets it as well as anybody. He comes from, I think it's the third most rural congressional district in America. But when we see these policies that are coming from the ivory towers on the East Coast that don't understand what rural is, unfortunately, that will continue unless folks like you and I and your members and the members across the country can get in there and help them understand what happens between LA and New York City. And so, rural communities have been a passion play for mine. Again, it's getting back to my childhood, where I grew up, where my mother still lives. And it's important that we fight that fight. And until we win that fight, we're going to continue to battle.
I thank you for that excellent synopsis. And I was born in a town of 2,500, so that rhythm of community engagement at the rural level certainly matters. You wear a title of a government relations, and for many people, I think they become of the belief that government relations, you spend all of your time trying to change the opinions of the 435 members of the House, the 100 members of the Senate at the federal level, and then whatever the size of your state legislature is. But there's other important functions of government relations, which is to help the local voter, the local activist understand. And you have been instrumental in helping tell stories about seniors and some of the challenges, but also some of the successes. Talk to me a little bit about your passion for communicating why our country should value our seniors.
Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, and I spent many years thinking that's all I needed to do was change the mind of a couple elected officials and this thing would be done. And then I got smart and I realized that, you know, it takes more than a guy in a suit to change the mind of an elected official, right? So each of them have several hundred thousand people in their districts, right? And they don't necessarily want to move until they start hearing from those several hundred thousand people in their districts. And, you know, I started doing this in the early 2000s when we didn't necessarily have a lot of the tools that we have today. Again, as we talk about with direct supply, harnessing technology and innovations. And we've really been able to stay on top of what those are. So as direct supply has seen throughout the years how advocacy has changed, they also have changed, developing programs and platforms along the way. Yes, we started with a political action committee, as most do. That's sort of the entry level. You have to start there. But then as we realized additional problems were happening, we realized we've got to be smart too. One of those, and I think that's really where you're trying to get to, is the public relations and reputational hits that associations and facilities can take from folks when there are bad headlines, right? There are bad actors in our space. I hate to break the news to everybody, but here and there, there are folks who deliver care that should put them behind bars. All right. I'll say that very bluntly. But guess what? There are elected members of Congress who do things that should put them behind bars. Now, in our case, with nursing homes, what you'll find is the Washington Post, the New York Times, the advocates, the lawyers, they will frame things as if that one bad actor in nursing homes means that everyone providing nursing home care in America are warehousing and jailing seniors, and they should all be locked up. And that's ridiculous. That would be as if saying, you know, there's some member of a certain party in the United States Senate who did something uncouth, and so therefore we should ban that entire party from running for office, right? That's not how that works.
Yep.
It's bananas. But in our case, for whatever reason, we realized that we've got to stand up and start telling the actual stories about what's actually happening in senior care. Because one bad headline above the fold in your Sunday Washington Post can blanket brush every facility in America. It's on us to stand up and provide that juxtaposition that says, no, guess what? Yesterday, there were 17,000 cases of an amazing nursing home administrator or DON or CNA who grabbed the hand of a patient and helped them through something that was very challenging in their medical diagnosis. Or there was that one administrator in suburban Chicago who grabbed the hand of a patient and walked her outside so she could feel snow on her nose one final time before she passed away. Those stories, if they don't make you cry and smile with pride for what you're doing, should make you want to see a physician, right? But unless we're telling those stories, the Washington Post will not tell those stories for us.
Right.
I say this all the time. This is right below my public policy choices have consequences tattoo. Nothing drives clicks like moral outrage. Mm-hmm. And without driving clicks, nobody in the news media is getting paid. So these wonderful, heartwarming stories, unfortunately, won't drive a lot of clicks like one bad story happening somewhere in the middle of Idaho will drive a click in the Washington Post. So it's on us to tell these stories that are happening. We've developed an amazing platform called Tell Our Stories, which you can find at tellourstories.com, where we solicit, seek out, and oftentimes we'll go out to facilities and film some of these wonderful things that are happening. Maybe it's a fun karaoke night. We're about to talk to an assisted living facility in Indiana who's going to do an event around the Indianapolis 500 with seniors racing around the activities department. These amazing things that make people smile. The whole reason that families love having their you know, mother or father or grandfather in an assisted living facility or nursing home. These are the things we're going to tell because those folks on the East Coast don't necessarily want to do that. That's why you and I and others are going to at tellourstories.com.
Yeah, I appreciate that passion and wholeheartedly agree that I'm a big proponent of the old Tip O'Neill adage that all politics is local.
Absolutely.
And creating an environment where our elected officials, whether federal, state, county, or municipal, if they see the good things that are happening, it can have significant benefit in us doing our part to lift the quality of care for our seniors and most vulnerable.
You nailed it.
Yep. I'm going to transition to a couple of closing questions. I always like to weave in some leadership lessons into my podcast. As an association, work very hard on developing our next generation of leaders. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that kind of speak to your leadership style. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah. So the one question, and this is a question I ask every podcast guest. So if you went back and reviewed my library, this is a common question, but you know, most leaders have that one axiom that they kind of fall back on when they're facing challenging times, when they're in the middle of discontent. One of mine is the truth usually lies in the middle. That's kind of one that I ground myself in. Brian, what do you ground yourself in? What leadership truism really shapes the way you lead and work?
You know, I don't think I knew this 10 years ago, but I sort of figured it out just by paying some attention. And really what I have found that has been successful for me in my personal life and in my career has been to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you and then shut up and listen. And, you know, for many years, I was the young guy in the room, or I guess these days we would call it imposter syndrome. I felt like, what's this dumb kid from Southern Indiana doing sitting across the table from a governor, right? And I didn't trust myself, but I knew that if I was talking, I might be able to convince someone I was smart. And in the last 10 years, really, I've realized, like, just surround yourself with really smart people and give yourself that free MBA. Really, really take it upon yourself to just listen and learn, and you're going to get so much smarter and so much better at what you're doing. And I've been able to do that here. I've got two guys on my team that are in their mid-20s, and they are 6 times smarter than I am. And to be able to just sit and learn from them, it's really fun. It's not scary. Yep. And it makes me feel good knowing that one day when I step off the stage, our seniors are going to continue to be cared for in that advocacy space because we've got good people behind us. And so that's really probably the axiom that I've taken to myself more than any. And it sounds funny that a lobbyist would say, use fewer words, but that's where I'm at.
And you may want to double down on that statement. The final question that I kind of walk through is, what do you wish 21-year-old Brian would know that you knew now? And you kind of spoke to the surrounding yourself with smarter people. So I'm going to lead you into an answer here.
Sure.
As it relates to what you now know about the senior care environment, what do you wish you had fully realized at age 21 that would have made you a better advocate for seniors?
You know, this one is probably on the cliche side because it's been overused for years and years and years. But and I'm gonna mix up the idiom a bit. But it's something to the effect of 90% of success is just showing up. Man, there is some truth in that, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
The amount of things that you learn just by showing up, or that one person that you meet that you were thinking, do I really want to go to this dinner after I've been in meetings all day? Well, maybe you do, and you meet somebody that changes the trajectory of your career. I can point to several folks that I am still immensely close with today that, but for that one cocktail reception or that one breakfast or that one meeting, showing up is a little bit of everything. And then the other thing I would say, really, from a leadership standpoint in the senior care space, is also just taking the time to be quiet and disconnect for a minute. I say that maybe I'm an introvert in an extrovert's world. Nobody believes me when I say that, but it's absolutely true. But taking those times to just process what's going on and to see the chessboard, maybe in a quiet space when you can really think it through. Because look, your members know this better than anybody. Your administrators, your DONs, these folks are dealing with crisis after crisis after crisis, and there's always a fire to put out. I'm not even talking about the COVID, right? That was another thing during the pandemic. The amount of things that your members had to go through was epic, and everyone should have their face on Mount Rushmore for that. Taking the time to just sit back and reflect on what you've learned and where you want to take things, and giving yourself a minute to stop putting out a fire, to look to the future and what we can make senior care in America. is really, really crucial. And it's something that I've had the luxury of being able to do a little bit in the last few years. And I'm really optimistic. It makes me very happy and optimistic. Again, I sleep like a baby at night, knowing that we're doing the right stuff and we're fighting for the right people and the right causes. But it makes me very optimistic that we're gonna figure out this riddle that is senior care advocacy, and we're gonna make it work for the next generation.
Well, Brian, I appreciate you being so forthcoming and as a guest. I think your content is terrific, and I know will benefit my members. I would be very remiss if I did not say thank you to you personally, and thank you to your employer, Direct Supply, for understanding the importance of a multitude of voices weighing in on the importance of appropriately honoring and serving our seniors and our most vulnerable residents. So thank you for your leadership there. Please let the team at Direct Supply know how much we appreciate what they do for us. So,
well, and I'm going to turn that back around. I'm not going to let you get off until you hear from me too. Thank you for what you're doing, you and your team at the association, and especially your members who are caring for America's seniors, because there's not a more noble profession, and you all are doing it well.
And I love your Mount Rushmore statement. There are men and women across this state, across the country, that are doing incredible work every single day. They deserve our collective praise. So thank you for pointing that out. All right. This has been Studio CPO. This is Stephen Buck signing off. Thank you, Brian, for engaging with me for a little bit. And everybody have a great week.